Class? Oh, because everybody's off. That'll really throw people off. All right, I'll look at the schedule and figure it out. But assuming for the now that we're having a class on May 26th, that will be our next class after today. Is it June 2nd? Right, our graduation is June 2nd, and the week following, I think, is Shavuos. We're following that as Shavuos. So, okay. We are in the middle of, towards the end of Perek Yud. Let's just do a brief review for the benefit of everybody, and especially for those who may have not been here. I hope we had a little bit of a glitch getting the recording from last week online, but we did manage to get it up there towards the end of the week. So if anybody missed last week's class, they want to make it up, it is online, as are all of the shiurim. But we started chapter 10, most of it, which is essentially the Chacham's response to everything that's been going on at this up until this point, and specifically starts off with a response to the Nehaneh, who described the fact that the Chacham is essentially unheard and unheard of. Right? His words, his wisdom, all of his great philosophy is essentially no consequence in the world. Dvarav einam nishma'im. Nobody's listening to him. He's certainly not in charge of the world. The world is run by the Amal and the Nehaneh. And that essentially is where the Chacham starts his tirade against both the Nehaneh, and then the Yamal and the Array get caught up in the whip along the way. And essentially his basic motif is that the Chacham is the one who knows, who understands how to run the world, and he's frustrated by the fact that everybody else seems to be in control and in charge, and everybody else seems to be in power other than himself, whereas he's the only one who has the wisdom, the knowledge, and the experience to understand the world the way it should be. So he starts with the description of why that is so. Why is it that the Chacham, whose search for perfection is such that he is essentially such a small and insignificant minority in the world? And he concludes that it's because it is the nature of perfection to be easily spoiled. Talked about the fly and the ointment. It is the nature of that which is perfect, that which is pure, to be easily spoiled by one tiny little imperfection. And therefore, it may be true that the words of the Chacham are often not heard, but that doesn't take away from their potency and their power. And then he starts from verse 5 to address the issue of authority and control. Who's in charge of this world? There is a fundamental error and flaw in this world, like as an error that was created by the ruler of the world. The fool is in sitting on high in positions of honor and distinction in the world, whereas those who are wealthy, in quotation marks, meaning wealthy in that which the fool has nothing, particularly wisdom, are sitting in the lower echelons of society. Servants are on the horses, the ministers, and those who should be ministers and princes are slaves upon the earth. That's his address. Again, part of this picture of the Nehaneh in charge rather than the Chacham. And then he turns his address to the Amal. Chofer gumatz bo yipol, peretz kadesh, chanan nechash. The Amal, if the Amal would run the world, everything would be, would self-destruct, would collapse. He'd build ditches and fall into them, put up, take down fences and be harmed by that which the fence is trying to protect him from, moving stones, he would get injured by them. War would be unsuccessful in campaign and battle. Not the Amal is a builder and a doer, but without the architect and the design and the philosophers and the engineers to direct traffic, certainly none of that is going to be successful. And then he sets his sight on the Yirei Elokim, who he also calls a Sachal. He also calls the Yirei Elokim a fool, and he's the first person in Kohelet to do so. Yirei Elokim is usually treated with some sort of respect and dignity, not necessarily described as the fool. But here the quote is directly from the words of the Yireh Elokim, and yet he calls them the fool. Hasachal yarbed varim lo yeda ha'adam mashiyev asheyev me'achorav miyagidlo. Which brings us to verse 16, which is where we left off last week, which is his conclusion. After all of this frustration of the fact that the world is being run by the Nehenah, by the Amal, maybe there's a role for the Yireh Elokim in this world, but they're all fools and idiots, and the only one who really has any value in terms of contribution to be able to be in charge is the Chacham. And so he comes to the following conclusion. Pasuk Tet Zayin. Ilach Eretz Shemalkech Na'ar. Woe to you, to a land, to a nation, whose king is a fool. Shemalkech Na'ar. V'sarayech Babokir Yochelo. When your ministers eat in the morning. So if you have an Eretz, where Malkech Na'ar, a land that is defined as a land where your king or your ministers are fools, that is described as one in which your Sarim, what defines them as a fool, the Sarayach, Babokir Yochelu. They eat in the morning. Why does that make them fools to eat? I don't know, eating breakfast, I was always told, is the most important meal of the day. Why eating in the morning should make them fools, we will see in a moment. Shemakech na'ar v'sarayach babok yochelu. Ashrech eretz shemakech ben chorim. Happy are you to a land where makech ben chorim. What happy are you, a land where your king is free, but free not in the sense of an eved versus a ben chorin, but in the sense of the opposite of a nar, one who has real freedom, freedom of understanding, freedom of wisdom, freedom of achievement. Shemalkech ben chorin, sarayich be'et yochelu bigvura v'lo bashti. Your ministers, in contradistinction to a land where your king is a fool and your sarim eat in the morning, in such a land, sarayich ba'et yochelu. Ba'et yochelu, bigvura, velo bashti. So what's going on? Let's just take that phrase for a moment and try to understand it. What is the significance of eating in its proper time in a sense of gvura, of strength, rather than in the morning or in shti? What is shti? What is shti a short form of? Shtia. Correct. Drunkenness. So what is this a metaphor for? What's the significance of eating in the morning or eating at a time of drunkenness versus eating in its proper time, eating in a sense of strength? What's the metaphor to a melech eating? I don't think we're talking about breakfast. Remember who he is addressing. Essentially, who is he addressing? The Amal and the Yireh Elokim in the backdrop, but essentially, who is he addressing? Who's the Na'ar? Who's the quintessential Na'ar? The Nehenah. What does a Nehenah do for a living? Enjoys himself. Metaphorically described in Kohelet as eating and drinking. Right? Ein lismach ela, ein ladam ela le'achov lishtot. There's nothing for man to do except to eat and drink. So what is the metaphor for the na'ar, the fool, the nehenah, who eats in the morning rather than the chacham, who also has to eat? Nobody's saying the Chacham can't eat. But who eats ba'et and bigvura, in time and in strength, rather than baboker and ba'et shtia. What's the metaphor? To live for eating or to eat to live. That's a very good application. Essentially, to get up in the morning and eat, forgetting the doctor's medical advice that eating breakfast is the most important meal of the day for a moment, right? Not forgetting it in terms of doing it, it still is the most important meal of the day. But that's not the point here, it's a metaphor. And the metaphor is that when you get up in the morning and the first thing you do is eat, what essentially are you doing? And what have you achieved that day from which you are benefiting or eating? What have you accomplished that day so far?
Nothing.
Nothing, except to eat. That means you've taken out of your reserves without depositing anything in the bank. You've essentially woken up in the morning without achieving anything in the world, and all you've done is taken from this world and eating and drinking. And again, the shtia being very significant, the analogy to a drunkard who has does nothing constructive with his life. Whereas to eat ba'et means in the right time, eight being a theme of all of Kohelet, in the right time, l'chol zman ve'et l'chol chayfetz, to the right time in the context of this parak means bigvura, referring to after you've accomplished something of significance. If you've won the battle, you can eat the spoils of war, but there's no point in eating the spoils before you've campaigned. To eat the time of accomplishment, to eat that from the gvura that you have achieved in the world, that makes sense. That's eating to live. Right? Whereas, Eretz Shemakech Nar, you get up in the morning and you eat and drink, that's living to eat. That's exactly the analogy here. Ilach Eretz Shemakech Nar, Sarayach Babok Yechelu. Ashrech Eretz Shemakech Ben Chorin, Sarayach Be'et Yechelu Begvura Velo B'Shti. That's the structure of these two psukim. And then he finishes the point with what happens to a world and to a land that is run by the Na'ar. And the Na'ar again can be the Nehenet. The Na'ar can also be the Amal, who he's also called a Na'ar. And what happens to a world that's run by, to a land, to a nation that's run by the Na'ar? Ba'atzaltayim yimacha mekareh, u'b'shiflut yadayim yidlof habayit. Through laziness. Who is the most lazy of all personalities in Kohelet? The Nehenet. Through laziness, the roof will begin to fall, soften up, this leak, and b'shiflut yadayim, again, another term for laziness, yidlof habayit, the house will begin to leak, because there's nobody with the wisdom and the understanding to not only plug the leak, but to maintain the house in such a way that it doesn't leak in the first place. Take the metaphor of the property management and apply it to the national scale of the nation, of the Eretz, and you understand his point. Lishok osim lechem v'yayin isamach chayim. Such a person, in such a land, their goal is simply to laugh and to eat and drink. V'yakesef v'yane'atako. And ultimately, in such a place, that which controls and that which answers all problems is always money. V'yakesef v'yane'atako. But substantively, meaning in life, wisdom, understanding, is sadly lacking in a world where the Chacham is not in charge. And therefore, the conclusion of the Chacham in this entire chapter is a deep, deep-seated frustration. And the frustration is generated by the reality of the world he lives in. The reality of the Chacham is who's in charge of the world. Who are the leaders who run this world? The wisest, smartest human beings the philosophers of life, or the builders, the doers, the money makers, and the hedonists, liminehem. That's essentially the Chacham's challenge. Who is in control? Who's got the power? And if it's the Amal or the Nehaneh, sometimes even the Yirei Elokim, but the one thing is clear, the one who's not in charge, the one who has no power to make any influential change in this world, is the only one who has the wisdom to do so, which is the Chacham. And that's a source of great frustration to the Chacham. So just one more comment of summary. Essentially, if he has nobody has been spared his whip, the Chacham has essentially argued that this world is being run by the Na'ar. Ilach Eret Shemakech Na'ar. The world is being run by the Na'ar. That Na'ar can be the Nehneh. That Na'ar can be the Amal. Or the Sachal. Even the Yirei Elokim in this chapter has been called the fool. There's one more fool, according to the Chacham. There's one more fool in the target sites of the Chacham. He's called the Nehneh Asachal, or Ksil. He's called the Amal, Ilacheret Shemakech Na'ar, the fool. He's called the Yirei Elokim, Asachal Yabedvarim. One more individual in the sights of the Chacham who is described as a fool. And who is that? Which king? Ilach Eret Shemakech Na'ar is the Ne'ned, the Amal, and the Yirei Elokim. So what's left? We've got the Ne'ned, the Amal, and the Yirei Elokim, all called the Sachal or the Na'ar. Who is left? The Chacham is not the fool. The Chacham is the Chacham. Who is the only other fool left? No, say it again. He certainly is. Yesh ra'a tachat ha-shemesh kishgaga sheyatza milifnei ha-shalit. There's a problem in this world, a terrible mistake made by the shalit. That's right. The ruler, as we said last week, is not the melech. The melech or the moshel is the fool. The na'ar is the moshel baksilim. The shalit is a term in Kohelet used for the Ribbono Shalom. It's the only term we use for the Ribbono Shalom. Dvar melech shilton. Mi yomar la ma ta'aseh. What is the Chacham saying? That the world is essentially run by two fools. The Nehneh, who runs the world even though he understands nothing about running the world, and the Ribbono Shalom, who also doesn't understand the first thing about running the world, because if he did, he would have put the Chacham in charge. You understand the implication of the Chacham? If he is the only one who knows how to run the world and God put the Nehneh in charge, then who's the biggest fool of all? The Ribbono Shalom. Kishgagash yatza milifnei ha-shalit, like an error perpetrated by the shalit. Because he put Nitana Secho Bamromim, he put the fool on high. Vashirim Bashefu Yeshem. And he put the wise people on the bottom of society. He created a world that's upside down. Olam Hafuch Reiti. I told you the story last week of Rabbi Yossi. He saw a world upside down. That's the mindset of the Chacham. So we have a frustration with the whole gamut. From the Nehneh, the Amal, the Array, and the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. Yeah? Okay. I'll give him some credit. Kishgaga sheyatzam lifnei ha-shalit. But he's talking about a Ra'a. Right? So there's an evil in this world. What's the evil? That the Nehneh is in charge. This evil is described kishgaga. Like an error made by the shalit. Does it make it a lot easier? Maybe a little bit, but I'm not sure it makes it significantly softer. At the end of the day, remember that there's only one person in Qohelet to whom we owe theological allegiance, and that is Yirei Elokim. But it's important to note that the Chacham has put himself into a very precarious position. He has essentially argued that this world is one giant mistake. And that's very important for our next piece. We're going to see that in a moment. Yeah, it's a question. Well, it depends on whose perspective you're... He's frustrated by the errors of the world. So they were all frustrated by the mistake of the world. The Amma was also frustrated because... The Amma was also frustrated by the world because... Because he can't leave it there. He can't fulfill the destiny of what the Amal is all about. The Amal is all about change and doing and building, and that too is finite, and he wants to be infinite, and he's frustrated because he can't. And then Nehemiah was also frustrated because he sought the perfect world to which he could enjoy, and he found the very imperfect world in which there's nothing real except to eat and drink. So they're all frustrated. Shlomo HaMelech will provide in the 11th chapter. The 11th hour, maybe, but the 11th chapter. All right. Which brings us to the opening pasuk of the next section. Chapter 10, verse 20. Perek Yud Pasuk Chaf. Which is where we are, what we are going to address today. Gam b'madacha melech al tekalel uvechadrei mishkavcha al tekalel ashir. We read this pasuk last week. We identified the fact that because it's in second person, we have a shift in speaker. That speaker is the only one left, namely Yirei Elokim. And he's back to giving second person advice, which is the calling card of the Yirei Elokim, speaking to you. And he says to the Chacham, Gam b'madda'acha melech al tekalel. Do not curse the king, even in your b'madda'acha. What is b'madda'acha? Gam b'madda'acha melech al tekalel uvechadrei mishkavcha al tekalel ashir ki of ha-shamayim yolich et hakol leval knafayim yaged davar. In your thoughts, is that what it says there? Really?
Yeah.
Really? Is that how they translate it? Wow.
Right.
No, wow.
Even in my thought.
Wow. Okay. All right. I thought I liked
it.
Kishgaga sheyatza milifnei hashalit. It's very by the by, right? It's not direct. But it's pasuk hey. Correct. Now we're summarizing it. Correct.
Isn't that out of context,
though? Which verse are you referring?
Hey.
Let's leave hey for now. We addressed it more in detail last week. I mentioned it only as an aside. It's not really the main thrust of this issue. Although it is in a certain sense here, because he's telling the Chacham, Melech al tekalel. He's warning the Chacham. Don't curse the king. He's warning the Chacham. Al tekalel ashir. Don't curse the wealthy. And he's doing so by telling him, b'madda'acha u'b'chadrei mishkavcha. Right? The verse is set up as like most biblical verses in two phrases. B'madda'acha melech al tekalel, v'chadvei mishkavcha al tekalel ashir. I understand what chadvei mishkavcha is. What is chadvei mishkavcha? Bedroom. And if that's the bedroom, what is madda'acha? We're so innocent. Emor lachochma achoti at umoda labina tikra. We saw that first back when we did the piece for Mishlei. Madacha is a biblical term for intimate relations. Vayeda adam et chava ishto. Correct. Because they're two verses that are exactly synonymous with each other. B'madda'acha, b'chadei mishkavcha, in your chambers, in your bedrooms, in your most intimate moments, when you tell only your deepest, darkest secrets, and you think nobody can hear you, and you think you are in secret, because there is nothing more intimate and quiet and modest and secret than what goes on in the bedroom. Melech al tekalel. Do not dare curse the king. Al tekalel ashir. Do not curse the wealthy. Why not? Ki baal knafayim. What's the expression? Ki of hashamayim yolicha takol baal knafayim yagid davar. Modern Hebrew would say because the walls have ears. Right? In biblical Hebrew, because the birds have wings. Right? A little bird told me? That's exactly right. A little birdie told me. Kibal knafayim yaged davar. That's the Chacham's response to the Chacham. The Yirei Elokim's response to the Chacham. The rest of it we will address Bezrat Hashem in a couple of weeks' time. I want to understand this verse. What is the Yirei Elokim's response to the Chacham? And how did we get into the issue of cursing the king and cursing the wealthy? Where did the klala come from? So I alluded to the fact that in verse 5, he is somewhat critical of one that could easily be understood as being critical of the Ribbono Shel. But that's a far cry from a klala. Where's the klala? So here I think we have to go back to the fact that there's an unanswered or unaddressed piece of argument between the Chacham and the Yirei Elokim. That goes all the way back to the first time we saw the Chacham in chapter 7. And at that time, if you take a look back in chapter 7, the end of the Chacham speech in chapter 7 was starting with verse 20. Ki adam ein tzadik ba'aretz ashi yaseh tov v'lo yachta. There is nobody who is righteous in the world who does good and does not sin. Gam l'chol ha'dvarim asher yidaberu al titen libecha. To all of those things which they speak, do not pay any attention. Alosh asher lo tishma et avdecha mekalelecha. You shouldn't hear your servant curse you. Because you know in your heart that you've cursed others. And that was an address to the Yirei Elokim. Alti tzadik habe, do not be too righteous. Alti shar be, do not be too wicked. Chachmat ha'oz l'chacham, yasva shalatim asher ba'ir, ki en adam tzadik ba'aretz asher yaseh tov v'lo yachta. Man can't be perfect, nobody gets away without sinning. There's a balance to everything. A little bit of righteousness, a little bit of wickedness, and you'll survive the world very nicely, because ultimately you can't do anything about all the problems in the world anyway, so learn to live with it. Learn to live with death, and learn to live with imperfection, and learn to live with... And that was the Chacham back in chapter 7. Ultimately, learn to live with death. And his conclusion was, as far as Yirei Elokim is concerned, don't try to be too righteous because you're not going to succeed. And you want to talk about purity of tongue and purity of speech. I've heard many times, I see in your heart of hearts, when you go and you curse somebody behind their back, and then they curse you, and you get the comeuppance, you get back what you give at, what you dish out. And ultimately, I understand that you tzaddik are not such a tzaddik, and gam ata kilalta achir. You've also cursed others. That was the last word the Chacham said to the Yirei Elokim. And in the response of the Yirei Elokim back in chapter 7, his response was to talk about women. Remember? His response was to talk about the methodology of the Chacham. Good wisdom versus bad wisdom. The good woman versus the bad woman. His response was to address the role of Chochmah in the world versus the role of Yirat Elokim in the world. And then the Nehenneh got into the mix, and he started to talk about Gemul, and reward and punishment, and Schar Va'onesh, and all kinds of issues related to justice in the world. And that sidetracked our discussion for a little while between the Chacham and the Yirei Elokim over the issue of Gemul, is there retribution in the world? And so the Yirei and the Chacham had a debate over divine punishment, reward and punishment. Then the Nehenneh came back into the discussion, and he said, no, there's nothing, there's no divine punishment, there's virtually no divine, there's certainly no afterlife, there's nothing of significance, everything is just a roller coaster ride. And the Chacham comes back with a great frustration. That stupidity, in the words of, couched in the form of philosophy that has been spewed by the Nehenneh, has put the Nehenneh in charge of this world. If that's who's in charge of this world, then the Almighty has made a terrible mistake. And for the first time, the Yirei Elokim comes back to address the one unanswered critique of the Chacham, namely the issue of cursing. The Chacham was the one who accused the Yirei Elokim of being inconsistent, of being hypocritical. The Chacham, the Yirei Elokim, is the one who said, guard your tongue, shmur raglecha kasher telecha bet Elokim, tov shelo tidom mishatidov velo tishalem, better not to take an oath, guard your tongue, watch what you say. The Yirei Elokim is the one who spoke about how careful you have to be with what you say, to which the Chacham had accused him of hypocrisy because he dared talk about what you say and how you say it when he is no better than anybody else. What is the Yirei Elokim responded to the Chacham? In the quietest, innermost, secret places, be careful what you say, Chacham. Don't curse the king. Don't curse the wealthy. Don't curse anybody. Why? What does that have to do with the Chacham? What does that have to do with the Chacham? Essentially, the Chacham accused the Yirei Elokim of hypocrisy by his accusation of Melech, of Gamatat Kilalta Acherim. How has the Yirei Elokim responded to the Chacham? Maybe he's denying them for himself, but I'm more concerned about what he's suggesting to the Chacham. Correct. More powerful than you, more knowledgeable than you, more authoritative than you, wealthier, powerful king. Altakalu. Stop cursing. Stop criticizing. Stop expressing such bitter and utter frustration. Why is that significant for the Chacham?
And he's telling him, be careful, because you are saying may be become known and you will go.
That is what he's saying. But my question is why? What is that significant for the Chacham? What is the Chacham hearing? There's always a difference between, I learned this from experience many times in the Rabbanis. There's always a distinction between what one says and what the others hear. Every time I give a drasha, I'm keenly aware that there's always a distinction between what one says and what others hear. It's not always a consistent message. The Chacham, the Yirei Elokim is saying, Melech al tekalel. No, stop cursing the king. What is the Chacham hearing? What is the Chacham hearing? Let's go back to the Chacham for a moment. Let's try to understand the Chacham in context. I want to actually take a step further back. Let's stop for a moment and do a brief summary of what we've seen in Kohelet to date. We have watched four personalities in Kohelet transition through a philosophical exercise of an attempt to understand the world. We have seen the Amal and the Nehenneh start with profound religious positions, frustrate themselves to a point of reversing significant positions, and finding themselves now writing themselves out of the book. What do I mean by that? And we've seen this exercise twice. We saw it with the Amal at the end of chapter 6, and we saw it with the Nene at the end of chapter 8, or at the end of chapter 9, where if you look at the Amal had started with the description of a desire to impact the world, to make a difference in the world, to build something in this world, something of substance, something of eternity, frustrated by the inability because of death. So then he turned to solutions to that problem, various ways of conquering that problem, be it the problem of a yoresh, an heir, be it the problem of a society. But ultimately he starts, the Amal starts from the concern about the dimata ashukim, the tear of the oppressed, the fact that there is injustice in this world and somebody has to do something about it. And who's responsible for doing something about it? The Amal. But the constant frustration that death stops his ability to achieve anything in this world has brought him to the conclusion at the end of chapter 6 that if there's nothing he can achieve because death constantly stands in the way, it's better not to go through the exercise of living a frustrated life and then having nothing to show for it. So he starts with the desire to build into a massive fortune so that he can fix the world. He ends with a desire to amass a fortune so that he can benefit and eat it and consume it. All of the purpose of toil is to consume it, and yet the soul is never satiated. And therefore, the best conclusion is not to be born. A conclusion that's not viable, and therefore, he writes himself out of the script. So the Amal transitions from this ideological position of, I'm going to conquer the world, I'm going to change the world for the better, to, I'm going to build and amass the fortune. The methodology is the same. The Amal is still the Amal, but the purpose has changed. He sought a greatness to man, and he ended up with a smallness to man. The Nehenneh is the exact opposite. The Nehenneh starts from the world where God is great, the world is perfect, everything's great, and I'm here as a guest of the Almighty. I get to sit on the altar and enjoy the benefits of the world. I am God's guest in the world. God made a perfect world. Frustrated and spoiled because of the existence of God in man's, God's perfect world that he created, what do we find? Evil. Mishpat. Resha. Injustice. Perpetrated by one against another. So his initial solution to that problem was, his initial response to that was, not to worry, God will take care of it. Not to worry. God is in control. I'm here to enjoy God's world. God will solve the problem. That in and of itself frustrated him, because if God is going to hold man accountable, man has to be responsible for his actions in order to be accountable. But if God is in control, man is not responsible for anything. So the logical inconsistency of the Nehenneh brought brought about his own downfall, and he ended up with a position that there can be no justice in the world to come because man is insignificant and powerless in this world. So therefore, he leads himself to a conclusion in chapter 8 that there's no mishpat, there's no justice, there's no retribution, there's no reward and punishment. All there is enjoy the ride, enjoy the moment. So the Nehenehu started with a greatness to God, ends up with a smallness to God. Both focused on their own position. The Amal is focused on man, the Nehenehu is focused on God. The Chacham and the Yirei Elokim share a common denominator. They share the position that they are both essentially guests in God's world. Whereas the Amal is in control of the world, and the Chacham is... let me rephrase that. The Yirei and the Nehenehu, the share the position that they are guests in God's world. The Chacham shares the ideological position of the Amal. That's why the Amal disappears and the Chacham replaces him, that they have some kind of role to play in this world. And the Amal saw himself in complete control, ultimately disappeared, replaced by the Chacham, who tried to understand, take a step back and try to understand the world and understand his role in the world. And the position of the Chacham back in chapter 7 when we first introduced ourselves to the Chacham was what? When he started to talk about Tov lelecha to beit evel, milecha to beit mishteh, it's better to go to a house of mourning than to go to a house of feasting. Or he spoke about the Al ti tzadik harbe, do not be too righteous, do not be too wicked. Learn to live with a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Giladam. What essentially was the ideological position of the Chacham when we first introduced ourselves to him? Moderation. Acceptance. Right? The notion that, ultimately, whereas the Nehenehu was trying to conquer death, the Yamal was trying to conquer death, and the Nehenehu was trying to ignore death, the Chacham turned to both of them and said, death is a reality, learn to accept it and live with it. And therefore you go to the Beis Avo. Ki achai ten libo, because you have to take it to heart. You have to recognize that. It's better than the house of feasting. It's better than the house of partying, because there's no reality in the house of feasting. There's a reality in the Beis Avo, or in the Beis Avo. So that's how the Chacham started. He starts with a position that says that I can learn to accept the fact that the world is built on an imperfection. What's the imperfection? Death. World was created with an imperfection. Death. And therefore I have to learn to accept that imperfection. And every one of my personality and my colleagues and my friends has to learn to accept that imperfection. The Nehenehu has to learn to accept the fact that the eating and drinking is not the solution. The Amal has to learn to accept the fact that he's not going to conquer death. Even the Yirei Elokim has to learn to accept the fact that he cannot perfect the soul. He can't perfect the human being because the world is imperfect. Tzadik en ba'aretz. There's no such thing as a person who's all righteous. And the Yirei Elokim's attempt to be all righteous is going to fail because he curses many people. Because it's impossible to be always perfect. And therefore, what's the solution? What's the solution to all the imperfections in the world? Accept them. A little bit of this and a little bit of that. Learn to live mediocrity. Learn to live the middle of the road. What's it, Aristotle's golden mean? Learn to accept it all. And then he ran into a frustration. What frustrated the Chacham? What frustrated the Chacham was the Nehenez attempt to place the Chacham's methodology on the world of reward and punishment. In chapter 8 and 9, the Nehenez did something quite tricky but quite brilliant. He took the methodology of the Chacham, which was to accept the imperfections of the world as you see them, and he applied it to the world of reward and punishment. Chacham was frustrated by the world of reward and punishment, by the righteous who suffer, by the wicked who prosper. And the Nehenez turned around and said, there's no rule, there's no rhyme or reason. The wicked prosper, the righteous suffer. There's no justice in this world, there's no justice in the next world. What you see is completely and totally imperfect. Well, if the Chacham was to be true to his own methodology, what should the response of the Chacham be? Learn to live with it. But the one thing the Chacham cannot learn to live with is imperfection in the world of reward and punishment. He was prepared to accept the fact that death is a reality. But to accept the fact that there's no justice flies in the very in the face of the core of the essence of the Chacham's being. He can't live with a gross injustice in the world. So he turns 180 degrees, and instead of presenting a philosophy of total resignation and acceptance of imperfection, when imperfection was death, but there's a broader context and a world to come and a world of mishpat, now the Chacham turns around and says, there is imperfection in this world. What's the imperfection? The imperfection is that idiot called the Nehenez is running the world. I got to put up with that stupidity? That narishkeit? That's where we're going to get to the Chacham in a moment. What the Chacham does, the Yirei Elokim does is he traps the Chacham in his own trap. He locks the door of the trap. Because what the Chacham has done now is he said, okay, if that's the case, then I can't accept the world in which you, the Nehenez, are expressing such an ideology that says that there's no reward and punishment and there's no justice. It's unfair, says the Chacham. Kishgaga shiyatza milifnei ha-shalit. It's an error, it's a mistake. God made a mistake when he put you in charge. Sachal nitana sechel bamramim, ve'ashirim bashefu yeshevu. The fools are in charge of this world. I, the Chacham, I, the only one who's wise, the only one who understands that you have to accept death when everybody else is trying to ignore it or conquer it. I'm the only one who understands this world. I should be in charge. There is nothing more paradoxical than the Chacham whose methodology is one of look at the reality of the world. What's the philosophy of the Chacham? The methodology of the Chacham. He looks at the reality of the world and draws a picture of what the philosophical... He draws the imagery of what he sees. His wisdom derives from human experience. There's no right or wrong. There's only what is. What is in chapter 7? Death is there. It's real. Learn to accept it. Righteousness balanced with wickedness is real. Learn to accept it. Because that's what philosophy is. You look at the world and you draw its conclusions or derive your conclusions from reality. You can't impose reality upon the world. That's the world of the Yirei Elokim's job, not the Chacham. There's nothing more paradoxical and contradictory than a Chacham whose methodology is assess the world's functionality, draw its conclusions, to say that the world is a mistake, that the world is a frustration, shgaga, shiyatzam lifnei shalit, that the Nehenez is in charge and not me. Not your job, Chacham, to be in charge. Your job is to assess. Your job is to determine, assess, analyze. To put you in charge would be to turn you into the Amal. To put you in charge would be to turn you into the Nehaneh or into the Yirei Elokim. Your job isn't to be in charge. Your job is not to be frustrated. Your whole ideology is built around the fact that you assess the imperfections of the world and accept them. And that's what the Yirei Elokim says to the Chacham. He traps him. And he says to him, Melech al tekalel, you, Chacham, you should curse the king of all people in this world to express frustration at the world. The one who should be least frustrated is the Chacham. Who? Kishgagashi etzam lifnei shalit is pretty harsh. Okay, so but it's not so much the respect as much as the methodological trap of the Chacham. That's essentially what they've all done. They've all essentially argued themselves into a circle. Right? In just the case of the Chacham, the Yirei Elokim gets him, traps him, says to him, you see, Melech Alta, you talk to me about cursing the king, and you talk to me about accepting every other position in the world because that's what a Chacham is, and you do so by saying, Kishgagashim sheyatzam lifnei shalit, that the world is being run by two fools. The fool is the king, and the fool is the king of kings. And he takes it one step further. What's the expression? I keep forgetting the other half of the phrase. Because you will be discovered. By whom? By whom? By the little birds. By the little birds. Why the little birds? Why Baal Knafayim? The Ofer Shamayim. Again, what's the argument of the Chacham? What's the argument, the position of the Chacham in chapter 10? What does the Chacham want? Power. Control. Because he is the most powerful in the world. He is the most wise. He is the only one who can figure out how to run this world, and therefore he should be running it, even though that's not the job of the Chacham. The job of the Chacham is not to run the world, it's to assess the world. But that's the trap he's worked himself into. He now wants to run the world. To which the Yirei Elokim says to him, to be in charge of this world, you have to be the most powerful. Right? Are you the most powerful? Who's more powerful than you? Before we get there, who's more powerful than you? A little bird is more powerful than you. You're a nothing. You're a nothing. You're a speck. Where you think you're safest, where you think you're most secure, where you think you're most in private, you could be outsmarted by a bird. You're a nothing. Melech al tekalel ashir. Don't curse the powerful. Don't curse the king. Don't curse those who are in positions of authority over you, because you never know who's more powerful than you are. Learn to accept that there are people and there are things in this world that are more powerful than you are, my dear Chacham. And suddenly the tables have turned. The Chacham who said to everybody else, calm down, don't be so angry, learn to accept, is now being told by the Yirei Elokim, calm down, don't be so angry, learn to accept that you're not in control and that you're not in charge, and that you're not the most powerful in this world, because Kibal Knafayim and the Ofer Shamayim are more powerful than you. That's a message that can only come from the Yirei Elokim. Why? Why is the Yirei Elokim the only one of the four personalities who can say to the Chacham, learn to accept that the fool is in charge of this world. He's not arguing the fact that the Nar is in charge of this world. He's not arguing with the fact that power is in the hands of the Nehene. He's just saying that's okay. Why? Why is the Yirei Elokim the only one who can make that assertion? Because he accepts that there are things we don't understand, because he's the Yirei Elokim, and more importantly, he accepts that he's not in control. He's the only one of our personalities who's prepared to accept the fact that he's not in total control. Who is? The Ribbono Shel Olam. And because he knows the Ribbono Shel Olam is in total control, he's prepared to accept those who may be in temporary control underneath him that aren't himself. In other words, it takes the individual who has enough faith in the control of the Melech Malchei HaMelechim to accept the authority of the Melech no matter who he or she may be. It's the methodology of faith in ultimately in the one who is in complete control of the world. Now it's like Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu in a powerful passage describes the fact that God has created the whole world and he can give it to whoever he wants. And he has now placed the world into the hands of Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel Avdi. Nebuchadnezzar, king of Bavel, my servant, Yirmiyahu calls him. Only Yirmiyahu can describe the king of Babylon who's about to destroy the temple and exile the Jewish people and destroy the kingdom of Israel as the servant of God. Because the emunah of the faith that God is ultimately in control gives him the ability to see even Nebuchadnezzar as a shliach of the Ribbono Shel Olam. But you have to have the depth of emunah of a Navi to be able to see that kind of pattern in the world, be able to have that kind of emunah in the world. And only the Yirei Elokim, therefore, can say to the Chacham, even if the Nehneh is in charge, the Nehneh is a Rasha Merusha. The Nehneh is the one who denies any existence in the world to come. The Nehneh is the one who says anything in your power to do because there's nothing beyond the grave. Says the Chacham, I'm prepared to let the Yirei Elokim be in charge. Says the Yirei Elokim, I'm prepared to let even the Nehneh be in charge. Melech al tekalel, do not curse the king. If he's the king, he has the authority and the power, you respect him. Of Ahav. Remember King Ahav? Ahav was a great idolatrous king who was married to Izebel, queen of Sidon, a daughter of the king of Sidon. Introduced the idolatry of Baal back into the land of Israel. Terrible, terrible king from an idolatry perspective, from a theological perspective. The Gemara says in the Pasuk that Eliyahu ran before Ahav. The Yarotz, Eliyahu lifnei Ahav, says the Gemara, that he ran before his chariot out of cover to the king. Because he's the king. He may be an Ahav and he may be married to Izebel, but Ahav is the king and Izebel is the queen, and you give him the respect of the king and the queen. Only an Yirei Elokim can make that assertion. Only a Yirmiyahu is prepared to describe Nebuchadnezzar as Eved Hashem, because he sees them as agents of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Only a Yirei Elokim can say to the Chacham, the Nehneh is in charge, Al Tekalel Hashir, be careful what you say. Treat him with respect. And certainly Melech Al Tekalel, whether it be the earthly king or the heavenly king, because you are not in charge of this world. Ultimately the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that's the introduction to the response of the Yirei Elokim, who will now turn the table backwards and respond to the Nehneh, to the Amal, to the Chacham, and have the final word in the Sefer Kohelet. We have reached that point in our study of the book where we have reached really the last section. So I'm going to give you a couple of weeks off to contemplate what we have learned. You can review the Sefer, you can go over your notes, you can re-listen to the tapes, but we will be off for the next 2 weeks. because I am out of town for the next 2 Mondays. And then the question of May 26th, which is Memorial Day. So let me do this question again. Who